there's a healing that comes from knowing that this messianic figure identifies with our suffering.
This is Chapter, Verse, and Season, a lectionary podcast from Yale Bible Study. Join us each week as two Yale Divinity School professors look at an upcoming text from the Revised Common Lectionary. For Good Friday, we're bringing you a conversation between two new podcast guests, John Pittard, Associate Professor of Philosophy of Religion, and Kiyama Mugambi, Assistant Professor of World Christianity. They're discussing Isaiah chapter 52, verse 13, through chapter 53, verse 12, which is appointed for Good Friday in years A, B, and C. Here's the text. Isaiah chapter 52, verse 13, through chapter 53, verse 12. See, my servant shall prosper. He shall be exalted and lifted up, and shall be very high. Just as there were many who were astonished at him, so marred was his appearance beyond human semblance, and his form beyond that of mortals, so shall he startle many nations. Kings shall shut their mouths because of him, for that which had not been told them they shall see, and that which they had not heard they shall contemplate. Who has believed what we have heard? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering and acquainted with infirmity, and as one from whom others hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him of no account. Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our diseases, yet we accounted him stricken, struck down by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the punishment that made us whole, and by his bruises we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have all turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, he did not open his mouth. By a perversion of justice he was taken away. Who could have imagined his future? For he was cut off from the land of the living, stricken for the transgression of my people. They made his grave with the wicked, and his tomb with the rich, although he had done no violence, and there was no deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the will of the Lord to crush him with affliction. When you make his life an offering for sin, he shall see his offspring and shall prolong his days. Through him the will of the Lord shall prosper. Out of his anguish he shall see. He shall find satisfaction through his knowledge. The righteous one, my servant, shall make many righteous, and he shall bear their iniquities. Therefore I will allot him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he poured out himself to death and was numbered with the transgressors. Yet he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors.
So the thing that strikes me in this passage is a connection between suffering and salvation. I think oftentimes when I think of salvation, or I think of someone redeeming someone or doing something good to someone, they come from a place of strength, a place of completeness. But in this passage, there are so many paradoxes of salvation coming from a place of incompleteness. Words like he was disfigured, His form, he was deformed beyond human likeness. He had no beauty, no majesty. So paradoxes of suffering, yet saving, punished, yet innocent, disfigured, yet the perfect sacrifice, unfairly treated and silent. You know, those kinds of paradoxes that come, that bring salvation out of a place of suffering and incompleteness. Yeah, so those that is what kind of immediately stands out to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder, Kiyama, if you see any clues in this passage about why that works, how that works. How is it that suffering and weakness ends up playing this redemptive role or being used in some way for the healing of the many around this person who's suffering on others' behalf? How does that work?
I think the passage, for me, offers some clues, but those clues are difficult to deal with because of my human condition, in the sense that there's a certain logic. I can see two logics in this. One is what I'm going to call a logic of zero balance. So sin has happened, or there's something that requires redemption, and so someone needs to pay for it, and it's either me or someone else in the kind of spiritual balance. And so if it is not me, it is this person, it is the Messiah, it's this figure that is talked about over here, who then suffers on behalf. So a kind of a logic of zero balance. But there's another logic over there, which is kind of a religious logic. And I somehow connect with that because it kind of speaks into my spiritual or my quest for spiritual connection. That is the logic of sacrifice. So there's a ritual that needs to happen to make things right. And I find in this passage, the passage talks in an extended way about that sacrifice that needs to be made to make things right or to restore relationship with God. So that's how I see the mechanics working. But it's difficult for me to see it and to live it because I'm the offender. It's me. At the end of the day, I'm the one who's causing this of humanity as part of humanity.
Yeah. This idea, obviously, it's at the center of our Christian faith, the idea that the suffering of a righteous person results in the healing and the righteousness of the whole. It strikes me as a mystery that invites us to grapple with it, to come up with some sense of the plausibility of this idea, of the beauty of this idea, but also a kind of mystery that's going to be inexhaustible, that will elude us, at least for this life, maybe even continue to elude us in its entirety in the life to come. And, certainly you're touching on some of the ways that Christian thinkers have tried to make sense of this when they've read this through the New Testament understanding of reading Christ back into this story. It does seem to me that it may be all of those things that you mentioned. It presumably is more than that. You know, somehow there's a healing that comes in this suffering. And I mean, one thing I wonder, of course, I read this as a Christian and thinking about this and wondering what this means about Christ. But I also come to this text wondering how Israelites who are in the exile in Babylon would have heard this. And no doubt it would have been mysterious to them too. But, you know, as they're grappling with this text, who might this suffering servant be? Might it be us as a nation? And our suffering somehow will help fulfill that promise given to Abraham that we would be a blessing to the nations? Might it be some righteous portion of our exiled nation? Might it be this individual, the Messiah? And I wonder if, while also, you know, conveying a kind of hope for some savior, if it also might have helped them have a different perspective on their own suffering and how they should bear that suffering, what the nations around them are learning from their suffering. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about how a people who are in exile, who are suffering, might hear this passage?
Yeah, I think if I drew from my example, I grew up and have lived most of my life in Kenya. And East Africa is a volatile region and has been for the last, I'm going to say, 55 years. And so every other year, with very few exceptions, you would have one of our neighbors having some sort of difficult time, whether it is Ethiopia or Sudan or Uganda or Rwanda, not Tanzania. And sometimes it's ourselves, sometimes it's Kenya that will have difficulty. And so I grew up with people from South Sudan. I grew up with people from Rwanda. I grew up with people from Ethiopia. We went to school with them. We lived with them. We went to church together when there were difficulties in their countries. We commiserated with them. And as a country, we felt with them and tried to help them go through their situations. And I think if I put myself in their shoes and put myself in the shoes of Kenyans who sometimes have had to go out of Kenya because of the difficulty that we have in the country, I think there's something very... There's a healing that comes from knowing that this figure, this messianic figure, identifies with our suffering. He identifies with the pain. He identifies with being despised, being rejected. He identifies with being oppressed, afflicted. These are words that are used here, but words that could easily have applied for my friends that we grew up with, that would apply with the children that my children play with. In school, you know, from different parts of East Africa. And I think there's something very powerful about knowing that God identifies with our sense of oppression, our sense of affliction. And yet there's an exaltation that comes, you know, at the end in verse 11 and 12, where, you know, God will give him a portion, you know, and will exalt him, I think, like it says in Philippians, on account of that or that suffering.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about ways that these passages can encourage those who are suffering, as Paul talks about sharing in the sufferings of Christ. And here we have this servant finding satisfaction through his knowledge. And presumably this comes, I read this as finding satisfaction through the knowledge that this suffering will conduce to the flourishing of all of those around him. And it's a hope, not only something we believe looking back as Christians that Jesus is suffering for our behalf, but that God can work in this suffering for the good of others in ways that are mysterious and that we don't fully understand. So hope here as well as promise.
Thanks for listening. We're so glad you're here. We're here every week, and sometimes a little more often, with new episodes to help you shape your preaching, teaching, and reflection. Chapter, Verse, and Season is a production of the Center for Continuing Education at Yale Divinity School. It's produced by creator and managing editor Joel Baden, production manager Kelly Morrissey, associate producer Aiden Stoddart, and I'm your host and executive producer Helena Martin. And our theme music is by Calvin Linderman. We'll be back with another conversation from Chapter, Verse, and Season.